All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. Welcome to our program. I think it's going to be pretty cool today. We're going to be talking benefits with Paul Lawrence, who used to be the former undersecretary for benefits. That's an expert. That's cool, right? And then in the second half of the program, we've got our good friend Rebecca Grant is going to be coming on to talk about what's going on in the world, which is a little bit scary right now. And we're going to see what we can find out about how America is involved in so many different things that are across the globe. So make sure you stick around for that. Before we get into the program, though, I got to make sure that we always thank our sponsors. Number one is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettle VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/AnnArborHealthcare. The Vietnam Veterans of America, never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, go to their website, vva.org. And locally, the Irwin Press Corps and American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettle's Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Thank you in advance. All right. So here we go into our program. My first guest coming up right now, as I mentioned, is Paul Lawrence. Paul R. Lawrence, PhD. His book is titled Veterans Benefits for You. He is a former undersecretary for benefits during the Trump administration. And I'm going to welcome him. So, Paul, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, Dale, thanks for having me on. Thanks for your service and thanks for help getting the word out to our veterans about their benefits.
I think it's always important. That's something that we really focus on here on Veterans Radio. So what led you to write this compendium of veterans benefits?
Well, as you indicated, I served as the Undersecretary for Benefits in the Trump administration. And part of what you had to do was administer the benefits veterans have earned. So I got to learn all about them, sort of what it is, what it takes. But I also dealt with, when I was in office, a lot of questions. I don't understand these benefits. Am I how do I access them? Am I eligible? And what is it? And so when I got out, I thought, certainly there must be a book out there about this. And I found there were some books, but they weren't about all the benefits. And they were written highly technical, generally by lawyers. And quite frankly, they were hard to understand. So I wanted to write one book, all the benefits, easy to understand. So I'm going to pick it up and figure out how to apply or how to help someone else apply for benefits.
Okay. Well, as I said, the book is called Veterans Benefits for You. And I guess we'll start at the very beginning. And this is, you know, something that we constantly reinforce for our veteran listening audience and their families, because it's really important that the families understand what's available as well. So how do I get started? Let's suppose I was in Iraq or Afghanistan, and I was exposed to the burn pits. Where do I begin?
That's right. Or you don't have to be there. It could be someone in your generation, Dale, said, hey, I never applied for benefits. I served 30, 40, 50 years ago. Am I still eligible? And the answer is yes. What you can do to apply for benefits, perhaps for burn pits or for Vietnam veterans, Agent Orange, if you're in the blue water, you finally realize something could be there. One way to begin is to go to va.gov, their website, and begin to look and see what benefits you'd be eligible for and what the process would be. You can buy a book like mine to try to explain it, or you can get help from a service officer, right? These are folks who help, or even one of your sponsors. If I understand, one of your sponsors helps veterans with their disability claims. So that's one of the best ways to do it. The thing to remember is, in terms of, let's say, disability compensation, right? There's three things you have to deal with. Were you in the service when this happened, right? I was exposed, or I hurt myself, or whatever. So in the service, not in combat, just in the service, okay? Did something happen to you and do we have a record of it, right? I hurt myself, I was exposed, and now does it continue to bother you? Those three things are what make you eligible for disability compensation, right? A monthly payment, tax-free to help you with expenses, maybe because it affects your wages. And then if under certain disability ratings, you'll be eligible for health care. So get started. It's never too late. Okay, if you had a difficult experience, go back and apply again if you think you didn't get what you felt you deserved.
So do you kind of advise people to utilize a veteran service officer or VSO or something, like the American Legion, somewhere along that line, rather than applying on their own online?
Generally, yes, there's exceptions to everything, but here's what I observe. This process is very complicated. Laws, court cases and the like. And oftentimes people do it themselves. They get denied for things they just didn't know. A service officer has done this literally dozens, maybe hundreds of times, and they sort of know the forms and the process. What they also are good at knowing is asking the veteran, what did you do when you were in service? And then going, oh, you were a pilot. Here's what happens to pilots. Do you have any of these conditions? So they tend to know stuff that can really help the veteran. A lot of veterans are very smart. They do it themselves. They have no problem. A lot of veterans don't. It's a very frustrating process, and that can make it easier.
Okay, well, I agree with that. As a matter of fact, you brought up a thing there. I understand that, if you are denied, that any denial can be appealed or reviewed, correct?
That's exactly right. VA is a very interesting organization. I tried this with the IRS. They don't let you do this, but at the VA, you can appeal any decision on your behalf. I was denied my benefits. I didn't get what I wanted. You can appeal. And there's a very easy way to appeal now. It's called a higher level review. It's kind of like in pro football when they ask another person to look at what took place and see if there isn't a simple error that can be fixed or a correction that can be made. And in this process, the veteran gets to point out in a phone call where they think the mistake was made. So appeals used to take 3 to 7 years. You had to go before a
Yeah.
judge. Tremendous. This is done in like 90 to 120 days. And there are other ways, but that's amongst the easiest to do.
Wow. I think what's great what you've done here, Paul, with this book and what other, VSOs across the country are doing is just trying to make people aware of these benefits that you're entitled to. And I think it's really important to remind those Vietnam vets, Korean vets are still around, that they're still entitled to, some sort of benefit, possibly as a result of whatever occurred to them while they were in the service.
Absolutely. And don't forget, as we talked before, the benefits can extend to your family because of what happened to you. So a lot of veterans, especially the young ones, go, no, I'm good. I don't need this, right? And I say that might be true now, but in 5 or 10 years, how's your hearing going to be? How's your back going to be? What else is going on that you don't know about, like exposure to toxins and the like? So we tell everybody, it never hurts to come and apply for benefits. You're not taking money from anybody else. The money comes from a fund that Congress has to put money in regardless. And you should think about, think conditions get worse. So you might be fine now, but maybe later you won't be.
Yeah, you hit on that right there. Some people won't take the benefits because they think they're taking it from somebody else, and it's not an endless pool of money, but there's plenty there. So don't worry about it,
Yeah.
as far as that's concerned. One of the things that I did want to just touch on briefly, as I mentioned before we came on the air, is my daughter's father was in the National Guard and was called up during the Detroit riots in 1967. Now, would he have been eligible if he had been injured during that call-up time period? Would he have been eligible for benefits?
Yeah, so let's talk about being in the National Guard because here's where
Okay.
things get tricky. National Guard can be mobilized or activated by a couple ways, right? One is the governor does that. And by law, that doesn't count towards your service to being a veteran for benefits. When you're activated by the president, that counts towards your service for being eligible for benefits. So once you're activated by the president, the experience you're describing in Detroit, or more likely to go overseas in combat. Once you're activated, just a few minutes into that, if something happens, You've been hurt while you've been on serve, while you've been serving, and you're eligible for benefits. All the benefits that are available to veterans are available to National Guard members and members of the reserve. What they have to do is carefully look at the eligibility requirement. How much time was I in service? And that's where they often get tripped up. So yes, in the example you described, your father had been activated by the president. He got hurt while he's in this hypothetical example. Well, he's hurt while he's active. He would have been eligible for benefits.
Okay, I just wanted to try and clarify that, because and it's also in my mind. So many of these National Guard units that were, activated to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, they were covered during that time period. But if they come back and then they go back into regular National Guard units, that time doesn't count.
That's correct. And what it's counting towards is the rule of 180. You have 180 days of federal service, you now qualify for benefits, right? So the challenge is to get to that 180 days, and you may never have it if you're in the National Guard. The governor might activate you for emergencies. You might never be activated by the president. Therein is the challenge.
That is a challenge for all of those people, that's for sure. Okay, so let me think. How about VA home loans?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the best benefits for being a veteran, the ability to purchase a home with no money down. So think about our civilian counterparts, right? They'll save for a long time to come up with a down payment. Could be as much as 10 or 20% of the mortgage. So on a $500,000 mortgage, that could be $50,000. It could take years to save for that, and you might never get that. Because you're a veteran, you can purchase that same home with no money down. This is a huge benefit. You generally get a little bit lower interest rate, and you don't pay private mortgage insurance. About 5 years ago, the amount of money you could borrow using the VA home loan was uncapped, which means you can borrow as much money as you are credit worthy for, right? So your ability to purchase a larger and a home in a very hot market has really been expanded for veterans. There's a couple other things there that help you adapt your house if you've been injured in service. So it's really a very powerful benefit. And also, if you think about step back, home ownership is one of the best ways to create wealth in our country. For most people, owning a home is their biggest asset. So always encourage a veteran, think hard about owning a home. It's really a great benefit.
Well, it certainly is, and I was thinking when you were talking, excuse me, that in the hot markets, like you said, I mean, here in Ann Arbor, and the market is exploding, and a little 900 foot square foot house can go for $400,000 or more, and I think that that's that they've opened that market up to the veterans. Is that cool? Could you talk a little bit more about the ability to adapt a home to the disabled veteran?
Right. There's a program called Specially Adapted Housing. And what happens is, you could imagine you've gone off and you come back and now you're in a wheelchair. Your home needs to be adapted to a wheelchair. Your bathroom, your stairs, things like this, right? And it could be other variations of it. My sight got affected, right? So there's special mechanisms you can put in for sound and the like. So you can apply for what's called Specially Adaptive Housing Grant. And VA will give you a grant. It's up to, I think it's about $150,000 to have your house adapted to make it more accommodating for what you're going through. So again, for folks who are service connected and their house needs to be altered so they can live in it, this is something worth looking into.
I think that's a great benefit. I know so many people that have utilized that benefit. And the other thing that maybe we should touch on real briefly is the dependent and independent care, I guess, for the dependents. So once the veteran, well, I'll let you explain it. Once you have a certain percentage and you pass away from that condition, they continue to receive some sort of benefit.
Right. It's called DIC because the word is dependency indemnity compensation, dependent indemnity compensation. So everyone just calls it DIC because that's so complicated. You described it exactly right, Dale. If you are service connected and you pass relate because of something you're service connected to. So the example you made before, the person is connected for burn pits, later passes because of some cancer or something like that. Your family would be eligible for a smaller benefit called DIC, a monthly payment to the survivors. And then it also opens up perhaps education benefits for children, perhaps, and also the ability to use the home loan for the survivors. So this is where you really see that applying for benefits really can help your family.
That's another point you just brought up was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on this. If you are 100% disabled as a veteran, you can get educational benefits for your children. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Now, here's where the benefits cross over into state benefits. Okay, so states generally provide education benefits for 100% service connected, but it varies by state. So you have to look at that. The other thing that varies by state is the exemption from taxes for our service connected veterans. So here in Virginia, if you're 100% service connected, you don't pay property taxes, which is a huge way the government collects money from veterans. So it's very, so I'd also tell people, pay attention not only to the benefits we're talking about from VA, but what happens once you get service connected to the benefits you can have as a veteran in your state.
Right, that's the same in Michigan. All property taxes and everything, you're exempt from all of that. Let's go into actually into ed educational benefits, because those are pretty there are excellent benefits available to our veterans today. Can you go into those a little bit?
Right. So, of course, the one everybody knows is what we call the GI Bill or the education benefits. Serve for 3 years honorably, and you get the equivalent of a 4-year education at a state university, a free ride to a state university, right? So, this is really a good deal. People go to college, often the first ones in their families, and it really changes their life in terms of better job and a better career and the like. What's interesting about this compared to what you and I were just talking about before we came on is that benefit used to be available only 15 years after you served. Now it's available forever. If you served after January 1st, 2014, that benefit will not expire. So you can come back later. What's also interesting about this benefit is now it can be used for things like credentials and certificates. So you go to school or training for a short period of time and you get something that tells everybody, I am qualified to work in this field. The most popular right now is a certificate for cybersecurity, demonstrating
Sure.
you know about this. And these are six-figure jobs. So with a little bit of that, you can do that. And so credentials can help you differentiate yourself in the job market. There's also internships. And even I would tell people, think about training to do what we now call the trades, blue collar jobs, or as I say, the fastest way to earn $100,000 in America, be an
Right.
electrician, be a plumber, be an HVAC person. All this is available through your GI Bill.
And is that a set amount of money, or because I'm thinking you mentioned, you know, you could get a certificate now, but what about 20 years down the road?
Sort of. It's mostly through what's called eligibility. How many months of education would you get? So you're eligible for 36 months of education. Think
Okay.
about it, 4 years at 9 months a year, but you could pull off a couple of those months to get a certificate, right? And again, sometimes if you've already gone to college and now you can act, this GI Bill can help you, or you don't want to go to college, you can use it in piece parts in a bunch of different ways. So it is finite, but it's more the time. The money is more related to the institution.
The last one that I wanted to mention about education is that monthly housing allowance. I thought that was pretty neat.
Most people don't realize that if you're in getting, you know, on campus or, you know, in-person training, you are eligible for a monthly housing allowance. It's the equivalent of an E5 sort of, you know, pay rate. But it's also what's interesting about this is it depends upon where you live. So it's adjusted for high cost areas, perhaps Ann Arbor, San Francisco, Boston, and the like. So it can be several thousand dollars a month or more to help with expenses while you're going to school. So that's also something. So you think about this, you know, 3 years honorable service, the tuition fees, all those kind of supplies are paid for, and I get a monthly housing allowance for 36 months, right? So it's all right there to help veterans get an education.
You know, well, we've been talking with Paul Lawrence here, PhD, former Undersecretary for Benefits. He's got a book titled Veterans Benefits for You. I know it's available on Amazon and they can get that. Is there anything, you know, as we end this up that you would like to our audience to know about?
I just would emphasize the two quick things. One is don't forget your family, right? Don't, that's a really important thing. And the other thing too is maybe you have this where you all live. You drive down the street and you see the folks holding up the sign, say homeless veterans at the stoplight and whatever. What do you
Yeah.
want to do? Let me give you this number. This is the VA homeless hotline. It's 877-424-3838. Again, 877-424-3838. If you're like me, you don't know what to do, you want to help, you want to do something, if you call that number and tell them I'm seeing a veteran at First and Main, the location, they will
Yeah.
send somebody, try to figure out their veteran and get them help. So that number, I tell people, put in your speed dial, you
Yeah.
know, just call, because there's lots of resources for homeless veterans. We just got to connect them to those resources.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. That's really important. That number is 877-424-3838. And I know that I have, we all see these people on the side of the road that say that they are veterans, and I hate to be cynical, but when I see them and I'm going, don't you guys know that there's all kinds of things that we can give you to help you, and maybe just a card that says, here, call this number, or maybe I'll pull into a parking lot now and call that number and say, hey, there's a guy on the island between the expressways.
No, that's exactly it. And the most powerful thing you said is they can call, but we can call for our buddies, and they don't have to
Right.
be homeless. They could be on the cusp of being homeless, right? Someone lost their job, sleeping in your couch or whatever. You can call this number for them and get them help. Absolutely, Dale.
Wow. Well, I thought, well, there's a whole lot of great stuff inside your book, Paul, and I really want to thank you so much for coming on Veterans Radio and helping our audience again to find out what benefits that they're entitled to and where they can go and all kinds of things. There's just an unlimited supply of things in there. I'm stretching here a little bit because I'm waiting for my other guests to show up, but I'm trying to think of. Is there any hidden benefit that we need to know about?
Sure. So here's something, perhaps because you're of the Vietnam, the era generation, right? If you know elderly folks in your ecosystem, maybe in your neighborhood, who are veterans, but maybe they're draining their resources and you're wondering how they could live, VA offers a benefit called the veterans pension. Okay, that if your assets fall below a certain level, you can get a tax-free monthly payment that will help you survive. So the classic example is the old guy in your neighborhood appears to have no family, lives in a house, and you wonder, how can he possibly continue to survive? Well, when they measure your assets, they don't count your house and they don't count your car. So folks who own a home may be eligible for this benefit because the cutoff number is like about $151 or $2,000. So you can see if you own a home but you don't have much more, this can really help them survive. So again, this is one of those in your neighborhood, in your ecosystem, you know, are you sure these folks are okay? Check in on them because this is something I get asked about a lot. Hey, my distant uncle, I'm worried about him. I don't know how he's doing. Is there anything available? This is one. It's called Veterans Pension. So I would tell everybody about that.
I'm writing this down right now.
And of course, if that in this example, the uncle in my example passed and had a wife, there's a similar version called the Survivor Pension, where the veteran spouse under certain circumstances. And the trick on this one is the veteran had to serve during periods of war, so called wartime. But since 1990, we've technically been at war, so it's very current, as well as the dates for Vietnam are clear, the dates for Korea clear, and the like. So again, it's one of those things where you're really having a concern for older veterans in our life.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about that, we have talked with a couple of even World War II veterans that we were trying to get benefits for. And it turned out that this veterans pension thing was the thing that we were able to get them some money to
Right.
help them along, and especially their spouse.
Right. That's exactly right. I think it's really good. The other kind of thing to think about too is it's not just enough to say tell your family or think about your family. You also should tell your family if you are a veteran receiving benefits, like what's going on with your relationship with the Veterans Administration, because when you pass, your family will be grieving, but you don't want them to be surprised now to have to go and deal with the bureaucracy. So if you explain, these are my benefits, here is the pieces of paper that explain it. When I pass, here's what you're eligible for, here's how this will work. It really can help make it easier for them. So there's really a best practice of explaining to them what's going on.
Well, I think this has been really helpful, and I'm excited to finish reading your book, Paul. So I've been talking with Paul Lawrence. The book is Veterans Benefits for You. Every time I sit down and talk with somebody who knows more about benefits than I do, I learn something new. And I think that's part of the advantage of having, this radio audience that we can talk to so that we can get this information out. So Paul Lawrence, Veterans Benefits for You, available probably anywhere, but I know I saw it on Amazon, and I'm assuming that we can find you on Facebook, LinkedIn, and the rest of them.
LinkedIn, that's where I tend to use, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Paul, very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Hey, thanks, Dale. Thanks so much.
Okay, we'll be talking to you again. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Rebecca Grant. So I've got two doctors on today. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Captain Louis Millette was wounded by grenade fragments but refused evacuation. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
While personally leading his company in an attack against a strongly held Korean position, Millette noted that the 1st Platoon was pinned down by small arms, automatic, and anti-tank fire. Millette ordered the 3rd Platoon forward, placed himself at the head of the two platoons, and with fixed bayonet, led the assault up the fire-swept hill. In the fierce charge, he bayoneted two enemy soldiers and boldly continued on, throwing grenades, clubbing and bayoneting the enemy while urging his men forward by shouting encouragement. Despite vicious opposing fire, the whirlwind hand-to-hand assault carried to the crest of the hill. His leadership and personal courage so inspired his men that they stormed into the hostile position and used their bayonets with such lethal effect that the enemy fled in wild disorder. During this fierce onslaught, Millette was wounded by grenade fragments, but refused evacuation until the objective was taken and firmly secured.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're being joined by my favorite national security analyst from Washington, D.C., Dr. Rebecca Grant. Dr. Grant has been on Veterans Radio, I think, more than anybody I can think of other than me. And so we're really excited to have her on to find out what's going on in the world, because there's an awful lot of stuff that's happening out there. So, Dr. Grant, welcome back.
I'm glad to be back with my favorite Veterans Radio host, Dale. And wonderful to talk to your Veterans Radio audience again.
Thank you very much. This is a way we really finally can understand what in the world is going on out there. I suppose let's just start right in the Middle East, because that seems to be the hot spot right now of everything that's going on with the, killing of Sinwar and just ceasefire talks breaking down and not even starting or anything.
What a situation. And the first thing that I want to mention, especially to your audience, Dale, is that we have nearly 40,000 U.S. forces in the region, under U.S. Central Command, spread across that region. And it really goes all the way from the Eastern Mediterranean, sure, technically that's European command, but there you find the USS Wasp Amphibious Ready Group, which is actually with a Marine unit that is special operations capable. They've been there quite some time. And from there you go all the way through to the land-based fighters across the region. We, of course, have American ground forces still in small numbers, both in Syria and in Iraq, helping with the anti-ISIS mission and other things. Every type of fighter in the United States Air Force inventory is currently deployed, from the F-22 Raptor and the F-35, right down indeed to the A-10. These are at various bases throughout the Middle East. And finally, wrapping up with the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, which is down in the North Arabian Gulf. The Lincoln is actually the fifth aircraft carrier that's been rotated through there since October 7th of 2023, when the war began. An amazing amount of forces. I want to talk about the B-2s a little bit later on. But all these forces are there for deterrence. And as Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin says, they are there to try to keep a lid on Iran, and of course, to provide protection and mutual support for our U.S. forces there. It is just an unbelievable situation. Of course, as you said, the big news this week, the killing by Israel of Yahya Sinwar. And I don't know, Dale, did you see any of the online video or images around that incident?
I did. A drone kind of flew into the guy's living room of a blown out building, it looked like.
Yes, just incredible. I think no surprise to the veterans listening from, Afghanistan and Iraq. But I think for a lot of the rest of us, just such a reminder of how important drones have become in all the sensing and urban operations. It was something the U.S. had been planning and training for at least 20 years. But you see this drone fly into basically a blown out, maybe a second or third floor apartment building. Sinwar, it turns out, is there, hiding in the corner in the dust. And what had happened was Sinwar had been, living like a rat, like the rat and the murderer that he was, down with a small team of other Hamas operatives in Gaza, and a relatively young group of Israeli soldiers conducting operations there engaged them and killed Sinwar. And it took Israel about a day to identify the body and figure out that they had actually hit Sinwar himself. Sinwar was born in Gaza, died in Gaza, and everyone from President Biden, Vice President Harris, Secretary of Defense on down have made it very clear that the world is better off without him. Of course, now the question is, the State Department kind of leapt out and said, oh, Sinwar was the one, the Hamas leader, who would not agree to the ceasefire. And so I think for a moment, even there with Secretary of State Blinken and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, there was this sort of flare of hope that maybe without Sinwar, the ceasefire talks would get going again. But I haven't seen that develop out. Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei came out and said, nope, fighting will carry on. And another Hamas leader who lives in Qatar, Khalid Mashal, has said, we are going to continue and to create more martyrs and Hamas will go on. So really not a good situation. The ceasefire talks had broken down pretty completely over the last couple of weeks. The current state of play there is Netanyahu and Israel have agreed to the terms on the table, which are pretty much what they were in late May when Biden put the plan forward. But they were fairly close in that there were just some technical points to do with Israeli forces on the southern border and a possible corridor across Gaza to prevent Hamas from repositioning. And then also some issues about the terms of when the ceasefire would actually begin. So it was hoped that some progress would come out of that. But at this point, the bottom line is Hamas just won't agree to a ceasefire in Gaza. It's really tragic.
It is very tragic. And considering Hezbollah has gotten in on the action itself.
Yes, Hezbollah, for so many months, and I think the last time we talked, Hezbollah had remained relatively out of the action, conducting small attacks across the border down into Israel. Of course, all that changed over the summer when Hezbollah began to conduct far larger attacks. And, you know, Dale, the situation there, it's Israel's northern border, Lebanon's southern border. The Litani River is a UN decreed line. Hezbollah is not supposed to have forces below the line, but they do. And so Israel had pulled about 60,000 residents back from the border area, and the two sides have been trading attacks. Now, we know Hezbollah has upwards of 100,000 various weapons, ranging from old World War II-style Katyusha rockets right up through some of the most modern drones and Scud-type ballistic missiles. They have enough weapons to continue to attack for a long time. Israel is conducting now a ground operation to try to get the kind of Hezbollah special forces, if you will, out of that area, and also hitting other leadership targets. But so now we really are looking at a multi-front fight. Of course, behind all this is Iran. And behind all that is Iran's biggest international supporter, which would be China, who buys 90% of their oil.
It makes me speechless to think about what is going on over there. And then you got Iran, firing how many hundreds of rockets, into Israel. And Israel doesn't take to those kinds of things kindly. I am sure there's going to be some massive retaliation here.
That's right. You know, we saw the strike, a direct strike from Iran against Israel back in April, and then another strike carried out in October. And, you know, the thing is, Israel just has to conduct the type of strike that will reestablish deterrence with Iran. I mean, Dale, the alternative is, you know, Israel looking at a barrage of incoming Iranian missiles every 5 or 6 months. I mean, that is just not a way forward. And so when Israel retaliated back in April, it was a very technologically impressive, but very small and precise strike, mainly against an Iranian military base and some nuclear sites that the nuclear target set in Iran is sprawling and huge and very different. But Israel conducted a very precise and restrained strike. Now, Iran having attacked again in October, the question is for Israel, I think, you know, what type of strike will really get the Ayatollah's attention? And to my mind, this time Israel does have the initiative, and they'll have to go smash more of Iran's military capability. I expect them to still really prioritize legitimate military targets like missile production, drone production sites, Iranian military bases. But I wouldn't rule out seeing some attacks on various portions of Iran's nuclear enterprise, and possibly even their new oil terminal, which is down in the south at JASC, that's been running for a couple of years. But the question is, what can Israel do that will really reestablish deterrence? Reports are that the Israelis have actually talked with the U.S. a little bit about the target set, and that they have targets ready to go. And the question around Washington is, you know, what is everybody waiting for? And I think one issue here, of course, is the deployment of THAAD, our very elite missile battery. That's going to involve actually 100 U.S. Army soldiers on the ground in Israel manning the THAAD battery to help make sure that we have really good air defense coverage, partly for Israel, but also for our U.S. forces in that region.
Yeah, you know, we certainly don't want to have another repeat of what happened at the hotel where the Marines were back in the 80s. It's just amazing to me that all of these things are continuing to go on. You mentioned that you were going to, you know, you wanted to talk about the B-2s on the Hutus. Oh, on those guys. Okay.
That's right. The B-2, our elite stealth bomber. So the Houthis, as you remember, again, another Iran client, and they are the rebels in Yemen, not recognized by the UN, but they control a lot of Yemen, and they have been holding up Red Sea shipping by attacking, and they attack with all kinds of things. Sometimes it's a drone, sometimes it is a missile, sometimes it's an unmanned surface vessel. And the U.S. Navy there has been doing an amazing job. The destroyers particularly, and then an aircraft carrier that has kept an air wing pretty much in place. There was an incredible incident back in the spring of a Houthi attack on an oil tanker that set this ship on fire. And a U.S. Navy helicopter came in with the smoke and the flames and picked up some of the sailors off this burning ship. So that's the situation in the Red Sea. Most of the major shippers have routed around and are not using the Red Sea anymore. The U.S. Navy is sort of playing zone defense against the Houthis, helped by several allies, Britain, South Korea, Germany. Several allies have ships there as well. But periodically, Central Command has conducted strikes against Houthi ground targets in Yemen. There was a big strike carried out by Navy planes along with Air Force land-based fighters back in the wintertime. But now they have used the B-2 bomber, which is based at Whiteman Air Force Base, Missouri, probably a pair of B-2 bombers, and they were used to attack underground targets where the Houthis had an underground weapons cache or other type of military target. So the fact that they had to use the B-2, partly because it's stealthy and long range, but mostly because it can carry things like the massive ordnance penetrator and some of the biggest airdrop bombs that we have in the U.S. inventory. Those are the B-2 specialty. B-2 hadn't been used in a strike since 2017 when it hit some terrorist targets in Libya. So it's quite dramatic that the situation in the Red Sea has gotten to the point where the B-2 bomber has been called in.
Where do you see this going? I mean, there was an article today in the paper. George Will wrote a column, and I don't know if you had a chance to see it or not, but he's just saying that World War III is already underway, and neither of our presidential candidates have seemed to notice what's happening over there. And he talks about many of the things we have talked on the program about. You know, we've got we've just been spending 10 minutes on the Middle East. We haven't even gotten to Ukraine yet, and then we have China. You know, doing their stuff again. And, I don't know what would you do? My wife thinks you should be president. So let's imagine, what would you do if you were in that situation?
I tell you, that is a very tough question, because unfortunately the situation has really drifted. In the case of our relationship with Iran, it's been decades. And of course, over the past few years, we took off a lot of sanctions, done a lot of things that have allowed Iran to build up its terrorist network around the world. And the fact, Iran is the one that trains and supplies Hamas, trains and supplies Hezbollah in Lebanon, trains and supplies the Houthis in Yemen. And it barely even gets any notice, but we do still carry out occasional strikes up in Syria or within Iraq against resurgent ISIS forces. So what would we do? I think the one thing that has to happen is we have to see Israel really reestablish its security. Without a secure Israel, we don't have much chance for anything in the Middle East. I think actually what both former President Trump and Vice President Harris want to see is to get back to President Trump's Abraham Accords that had normalized relations between Israel and some of the regional partners. The big one that yet to come was improved relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. They were very close to a rapprochement back last fall. And I believe that is part of the reason that Iran and Hamas instigated the attack into Israel, was to throw that off. So We need to see Hamas's military capability ended. They are pretty decimated. We have to, I think, finish that. The Lebanese Hezbollah need to get back north of the Litani River. In the Red Sea, we cannot keep this big of a chunk of our Navy there forever. I think there either has to be a more coherent operation to knock out some of that Yemeni capability or something else to be arranged. And then, as I said, I think what anybody who's really touched this diplomatic situation wants is to get Israel and Saudi Arabia back on track to normalized relations. That will help a lot of the other regional partners fall into place. Unfortunately, this is also going to mean, I think, an international authority of some kind in Gaza, because clearly Gaza cannot be left to Hamas. I mean, I think one of the real tragedies of Sinwar and his type is that he cared not at all for the people of Gaza. Look what they have been subjected to in the 17 years that Hamas has run that place.
Right. Yeah. You know, when you start hearing people talking about, well, you know, we can't support Israel and so on and so forth, I think, as you just pointed out, we have no choice.
Well, and I'll tell you, the support for Israel, the Biden administration used the words ironclad. President Trump's position is no different. And more importantly, perhaps, the United States Senate is 100% behind Israel. So that support is very strong. And it does include weapons, as it always has. And I think also some operational advice and intelligence. That said, you know, it's now time for Israel to look at wrapping up that campaign and to start to move in the humanitarian aid that is poised to go into Gaza. But very, very tough until they can find somebody to sign on the dotted line for the Hamas part of the deal. The only other option is really to just completely eliminate Hamas and essentially occupy Gaza. No one wants to see that happen.
No.
But Israel believes it that they must maintain firm military pressure on Hamas in order to get any resolution whatsoever. And they seem to be right about that.
All right. Well, let's, you know, the world is a mess. Moving along, we were talking about Iran earlier, and, you know, and that they are supported by the Chinese because the Chinese are buying all the Iranian oil. And the Chinese are just kind of acting like the puppet master back there. I don't know how involved is Putin in any of this. I mean, he's busy with Ukraine.
Well, and don't forget, Putin is buying Iran's drones to use against Ukraine. Not only does Russia purchase drones from Iran, but apparently Russia has set up a factory to do co-production of a lot of these Shahed and other drone types inside Russia. So it really is, at this point, an alliance between Russia and Iran and China, you know, backing all of this. And if you took any one piece of it out, but particularly the Chinese piece, because there are a number of international sanctions on Iran. I mean, the stack would be 3 feet high if you looked at them. There could be more. But the fact is, the sanctions aren't effective as long as China's there to provide a secondary market. So, and then, of course, China, as say every day, they will tell you that they support Russia's war in Ukraine. So we are, in fact, dealing with this terrible alliance, and latest reports that there may be North Korean soldiers fighting with the Russians against Ukraine.
Oh, man. Holy!
How did all this happen?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you'd think we would have learned our lesson, you know, 80 years ago, but I guess we haven't. And which is what the Will article talks about. You know, back in the late 1930s, everybody could see it was coming, but nobody really did anything about it. But I think by having you on to talk about it is really important, so that, you know, at least we can be an educated audience that knows what is going on and maybe what could be looking at. I wanted to talk about China, you know, again, being active, you know, around Taiwan and the Philippines. And then I know that's another potential hotspot in the world.
Very much so. And you're right, Dale. You know, China enjoys being the puppet master, and having U.S. forces racing hither and yon just benefits them. It took us so long to see that China was not our friend economically. And then Xi Jinping has really ramped up his military pressure. So specifically with Taiwan, this happens every so often. There have been some big exercises of air and naval forces around Taiwan. Kinmen Island, which you may dimly remember from what used to be called Kimoi and Matsu, and there were big crises over these two little islands. They're very close to the Chinese mainland, but they actually belong to Taiwan. And there was a big crisis back in the Eisenhower administration over these. Well, China's been at it again. Now what they like to do is use their so-called Coast Guard ships to harass, you know, the ferry going back and forth from Kinmen to the mainland. And the same thing is happening in the Philippines, where China claims certain shoals and terrain features. The UN, The Hague, every international body says, nope, those belong to the Philippines. But China continues to press. And so frequently we see really scraping of paint between a Chinese quote-unquote Coast Guard vessel and the Philippine Navy. We've seen the Chinese use high-pressure water hoses or water cannons against the Philippine sailors. And why is this a problem? Well, the United States has a mutual defense treaty with the Philippines. Right. We are obligated by treaty to go to the defense of the Philippines if they ask us. And President Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., there is the one who will make that decision. And he has said that if these incidents with China cost the life of a Filipino serviceman, that he will invoke that mutual defense treaty. Now, guarantee you, we have our Navy P-8 surveillance planes and some other ships out in the Western Pacific that are keeping a very close eye on what's going on. But we really are just a little incident away from having a miniature fight with China over the Philippines. And it's going to be something that we have to do. We dare not let China have their way if it comes to a set to with the Philippines. And maybe your listeners don't know, but we've really rebuilt a lot of our basing with the Philippines. There was a time when the Filipinos were more pro-China. That has all changed. And that U.S. alliance has been rebuilt. And we have a lot of American contractors there making sure all the runways are ready and that we have the ability to get back and use the Philippines as a base if we need to help defend the Philippines.
We've only got about 2 minutes left. This has been amazing topics to talk about. The one last thing in those 2 minutes is you mentioned that the U.S. shipbuilding, everything seems to be delayed and that China's Navy is bigger than ours.
China's Navy is bigger than ours and set to grow soon to over 400 ships. We have about 290. So let's make some more. Well, unfortunately, the Navy budget slipped. The next aircraft carrier, which was to be CVN-82, doesn't have a name. The couple new carriers are being built down at Newport News, CVN-79, the Kennedy is ready to go. But the next one, CVN-80, is sort of just a shape at the pier. And the one after that hasn't even been started yet. The COVID workforce shortages, delays with a lot of the suppliers have really hurt the aircraft carriers and the submarine industrial base. And so the Senate has some plans to try to really put some money into this and get it going. But it's a major problem in shipbuilding. It's been building over the years and over the decades, but we've got to fix it. We can see how important our Navy is, and they have to use the contracting flexibility, the extra dollars, recruit and pay that workforce and get them building our new carriers and submarines.
No, absolutely. Dr. Grant, thank you so much for being on the program again today. And this, we just touched the surface. I would love to talk to you again after the election to see where we're going from there. All righty.
Great, Dale. Always a pleasure to talk to Veterans Radio. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So that was Dr. Rebecca Grant. As everybody knows, that's our resident foreign affairs expert. And I was really pleased to have her on at this time. Also, don't forget, we talked with our expert on VA benefits. So we want to make sure that you check those out. You know, contact your local VSO, find out what your benefits and what you're entitled to. We will be back next week with another, hopefully, a live program. The thing should work out pretty well for that. The song that we're going out on today is a kind of a combination of God Bless America and America the Beautiful. And it's going to be performed by the Brothers of the Heart. So until next week, this is Dale Thronberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio. Thank you so much for listening. You are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountain to the prairie to the ocean white with foam, God bless America, my America, my
prairies to the oceans white with